We've reached the dog days of summer, which means it's a great time for another Journal Sentinel Brewers podcast. My name is Matt Velasquez, and I'm here with beat reporters Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak. And we've got plenty to talk about as the Brewers have struggled a little bit since the All-Star break. I guess we can start with the players-only meeting that occurred after Thursday night's game. Tom, you wrote about that. You were there for that. What was it all about?
Well, as usual, we didn't find out about it until the clubhouse was not open after the game at the usual time. We were told we had to stay out. That usually means there's a players meeting going on. And so certainly was not a huge shock that they felt the need to meet with the way things are going on. They had a particularly listless 7-2 loss to the Twins Thursday night to complete a 4-game sweep. It's really interesting how things can change in one series. And, at this time of year, the Twins were considered pretty much dead in the water and had sold off some parts before the trade deadline and were just kind of foundering. And the Brewers were the team that was, you know, in a pennant race and in a good position. And then in 4 games, they get swept. And now all of a sudden it's the Twins, you know, that are in the heat of their wild card race and the Brewers that are in trouble. So it's just funny how things can turn within one series. Kind of happened over in the St. Louis-Kansas City series, too. Kansas City was, like, in the thick of their playoff race, and the Cardinals were, you know, foundering. And then, boom, the Cardinals sweep them 4 games and rally cats and grand slams and all that stuff. And then the two teams are looked at totally differently, and that's kind of the way this series went with the Brewers and Twins. The Twins left town feeling good about themselves, and the Brewers held a meeting. You know, and the two things, you know, the gist of those players only meetings is you usually do not hear exactly what was said. But it sounds like the common themes were, getting energy back and, having fun again. So, it's never fun to lose. So it's not surprising to hear that there is this, decision that they had stopped having fun. The energy thing is kind of interesting. One would think that professionals would not lose energy, that it's their job to keep energy. But when you're stinking for quite a while, especially offensively, the energy level sort of dips. So, the Brewers have particularly had trouble, getting any type of offense in the second half of games. And Craig Counsell even mentioned after the game that they thought they let the Twins relievers get by too easily. And their at-bats do seem to diminish as the games go on. Last night they scored a couple of runs early, then nothing after that. And we've seen, I think Todd can vouch that we've seen that modus operandi a lot, where they get a couple of early runs and then nothing.
You know, and Tom, does it surprise you at all? You know, that Matt Garza was the one to call the meeting? Is that a normal role for him to be the guy to step up and say, hey, we need to talk about this?
Well, they don't have many veterans, you know, in their clubhouse. So it's going to be a veteran who does it. And, you know, interestingly enough, he was asked why he thought it was time for a meeting. And his answer was basically expressions on faces. So he must have seen some lost looks from the younger players about what was going on.
And, you know, you guys have been around, you know, the team, you know, all season. Have you noticed those different looks and expressions and kind of demeanor as the second half has kind of progressed off to this, you know, 9-17 start?
I guess I can grab that one. It's for those of us who are outsiders going in there, it's kind of hard to judge those things. And especially after, you know, asking the same players the same questions to the same players night after night after night after these losses, and you just keep being told, oh, everything's fine, we're fine, there's plenty of time. I think we know that, you know, after a while that's just the stock answer and that's what they're programmed to say. But, you know, we don't really see their true emotions. You know, they don't wear them on their sleeves normally when we're in there. So, you know, we just kind of go by what they say. But I think we have a pretty good idea that, you know, things are tightening up. They had tightened up, and it's interesting that Garza and Braun decided to do that. As Tom noted, there are not a lot of veterans in that clubhouse. And for those two guys to finally do this is pretty interesting. And I wonder why it's taken this long, maybe. You know, maybe this should have happened a few days ago. But who knows? It's going to be interesting to see what comes out of it, if anything. Maybe they need a rally hawk. Rally Miller Park Hawk, Tom, or Falcon.
Yeah. Or just somebody to come turn a cat loose on the field. It worked in St. Louis, you know, and the next guy hit a grand slam. Then they hit another grand slam last night. It's interesting that the Brewers can't score four runs to save their lives, and the Cardinals have done it with one swing of the bat two straight nights. So it just shows you how different those two teams are going. Yeah, you know, Todd mentioned you know, what took so long. These things generally are like last-ditch measures, and the perception from the outside often is, hey, what took you so long, and it's not going to do any good. Well, that's because they don't like to call these meetings. And people say, well, why don't they do it more often? Because they have diminishing returns. It's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. You know, if you do it over and over and over again, it loses its effectiveness. So, you know, we will see if it helps. It might help in this particular circumstance just because these guys are also young and inexperienced, that maybe they did need somebody to snap them to attention and refocus. They've kind of just been wandering through the baseball wilderness the last few weeks, and you know, teams always look listless and disinterested when they're not scoring. That's the one thing that always makes you look lackadaisical, because people say, you know, what, aren't you even trying? Why aren't you scoring runs? So teams that don't score runs always seem like they don't care, or they're not putting out the effort. And it couldn't be any less true. They're usually trying too hard and squeezing the sawdust out of the bat handles. You know, I had a conversation with Darnell Coles, the hitting coach, before the game Thursday. I thought it was time to see what he had to say, because this team thing has been going on for so long. And there's nothing more inexplainable or less logical than everyone not hitting at the same time. You know, why? Because this guy's in a slump, why does that guy go in a slump? But we see it all the time. You know, they say hitting is contagious, and it often seems like not hitting is too. And, you know, why are so many guys going south at the same time? It's because they're all pressing and trying too hard. They'll tell you they're not, but they are. And, you know, there were no expectations in the first half, and they just kind of were loosey-goosey. If they had a tough loss, they bounced back the next day and played well. But then they hit the break. They were 5.5 games up. And instead of people always saying, what's wrong with the Cubs, the Brewers started getting some attention and some love and some national focus. And so I think that ramped up expectations, and it created some pressure both internally and externally, and obviously they haven't handled it very well. And I think their inexperience is a big factor in that.
You know, when it comes to these players only meetings and slumps and different things happening, do you guys, can you recall any times when a players only meeting has been wildly successful and kind of help turn things around?
Well, I'd be better to answer this one. I think there's sometimes when we don't even really hear about these. It's interesting that, yeah, obviously the guys had to wait to go in there last night, so that's why you find out about it. But I'm curious how many of these meetings happen where we never find out about them and what happens as a result of them. But Tom, you've been around a lot longer than me and covered this team a lot longer. Are there any shining examples of the Brewers snapping to attention after a players-only meeting?
Yeah, like you said, we may not even know about some of them. The only reason we knew last night is because we were held out of the clubhouse for a while. Yeah, I mean, they just all blend in together. They're always held in times of, you know, stress or failure, and so you know, veteran teams generally don't need them because the players kind of police themselves, you know, and who knows if councils held meetings as well. That, you know, there's player only meetings, and then there's manager held meetings too, and As a matter of fact, council was a little late getting into his session Thursday night, and we wondered if he was addressing the team. But if he was, maybe that's what held up the players-only meeting for a while. But who knows? And we're only allowed in the clubhouse a certain amount of time, so we don't know, you know, about meetings that are held when there is no access. And you know, to answer your question, can I remember like any shining example of one meeting helping? No, I can't. You know, I'm sure in 2014 when that team collapsed, and that was a veteran team too. That was not a team of young, inexperienced players like this one. I'm sure there were meetings held, you know, before, during, and after all those trials and tribulations. So it'll be interesting to see. If they play better in the next few games, then it worked. You know what I mean? If they don't, then it didn't. And I'm being facetious there because who knows if they're connected at all. You know, you have the Cincinnati Reds coming to town with the worst pitching staff in the major leagues statistically. So if the Brewers don't hit their pitchers, that's a bad sign. And people say, well, the meeting didn't work. Well, meeting or not, you know, it's time to get going. You know, this Friday night marks the 4 week juncture of starting the second half. They started it on a Friday night 4 weeks ago, and they won 9-6 that night, and there was just no sign whatsoever of what was to come. You know, and people looked at their schedule and said, oh, they got an easy schedule, the Pirates aren't playing that good, then it's back to the Phillies, and that they're playing all these teams with losing records, and it's going to, the Brewers are just going to keep sailing. Well, they won that first game 9-6, but if you go back and look at that game, they scored 8 runs in one inning. Braun hit a grand slam, and Arcia hit a 3-run homer. So it was 2 swings, gave them 7 runs, and that was indicative of how they had played and what the trouble that was to come, because they are greatly home run reliant team. I did a story on it recently, and I ran the numbers on all the teams, and the Brewers were 5th in the major leagues among the 30 clubs in reliance on home runs. They had scored 48% of their runs on home runs. And this is kind of the way baseball is played now. Baseball is a home run swing and miss game now, and I know all the bunt-aholics out there went crazy when they didn't bunt the other day in Tampa Bay. A lot of people think bunting can cure cancer and world hunger and solve the North Korea crisis. They just think bunting's the answer to everything. And that's just not the way the game is played, not just by the Brewers, but by teams in general now. It's become, you know, analytics stress home runs, and strikeouts don't seem to matter anymore. And unfortunately for the Brewers, when their home runs dry up, their offense dries up. And that's both the blessing and the curse of being so heavily tied to hitting home runs. And their home run ratio is greatly reduced over the last 4 weeks. I think like by a half a home run a game, which is a lot this time of year. And so they're not hitting as many home runs, so they're not scoring. They have not been capable of generating rallies. Their hitting with runners in scoring position has been abysmal. Todd, what was it? What did it get to when you were in Tampa Bay? Like 0 for 30 something?
Yeah, it was definitely like 0 for 30 something, and then 1 for 33 or whatever it was. It's obviously been a week or so since then, but it was really, really bad. And we had a chat while we were down there, me and a few colleagues and people about, you know, is this just like the new norm for the Brewers? Is this gonna last through the rest of the season? We're going on a month now. I think it's a legitimate question. You know, they'll have breakout games here or there maybe, but you know, is this a trend that's just gonna wind up being too tough to reverse? It just doesn't seem like anything is going right and anything is working. And I know there are limited solutions or things that you can try to snap out of this, but you would think after almost a month of dead bats and just and really listless offense that something would change. But maybe this is the new norm now, and maybe this is what you're going to expect, and the pitching is just going to have to carry this team the rest of the way. It's kind of crazy to think about, but after this long a period of time, I think it's almost a legitimate question to ask.
What's weird, Matt, is that, you know, they didn't swing the bats good for 1 month. They didn't swing the bats good for 2 months. They swung the bats good for 3+ months. You know, April, May, June, and then into the All-Star break in mid-July. So it's not like they had one good month that got everybody's hopes up and then they came crashing down to earth. They did it for 3+ months. So that kind of takes it out of the fluke factor a little bit, because we're talking more than half a season. And so that's why Craig Counsell keeps saying, well, we hit before, I know we're going to hit again, because he saw it for so long. But now we are, as Todd just said, on a 1 month reversal, and it's the same players and the same ability. And so my deduction is they just are not reacting well to the pressure of suddenly having expectations ramped up. And also, their inexperience, I think, is working against them. And maybe that was eventually going to get them anyway, because they had been generally perceived and openly assessed as being ahead of schedule. Well, now maybe they're not going to be ahead of schedule. Maybe they're going to end up being right where they were. It's the path that you take that makes things interesting in baseball, because if you would have said at the beginning of the season, with the expectations being low as they were, that coming into mid-August, the Brewers would be above 500 and just 2 games out and right in the thick of the division race, everybody would have signed up for it. Everybody would have said, yes, well, absolutely, that'd be fantastic, because they weren't expected to be ready to do that yet. But because they far exceeded expectations in the first half and got way above 500 and had a 5.5-game lead, then everybody changed. So people don't like the path they've taken. If they were 10 games back a month ago and had climbed to within 2 games, just think how different the perception would be. Everybody would be so excited. Instead, everybody's down on them because of the path they took. Well, in general, if you use the big picture and say, this is where we're going to place you on August 11th, you know, right in the thick of the race, just a couple of games, everybody would have taken it. But because they did so well in the first half and expectations were raised, it's looked at completely differently. And I've always found that fascinating about baseball. You know, they play a long season, they play every day, so there's a lot of ups and downs, and there's way more variables than in the other sports who don't play as many games. And it's just sort of how you get there that makes people judge what kind of team you are.
Yeah, I was going to mention, you know, as we were talking about this, that, you know, over the course of a baseball season, just about every team is going to go through stretches like the ones the Brewers have had. It just so happens that they kind of come back-to-back in a really short period of time. Is that kind of your experience, guys? Todd, I guess you could take that one.
I don't know. I don't know that you really can put a finger on it, or it's hard to quantify. I was thinking the other day, I was finding it interesting the parallels you can draw between this team and the 2014 team that was, you know, had all the veterans and went in the tank the last 6 weeks of the season and couldn't hit. That was 14, right?
Yeah.
Rami was on the team and Braun, and remember,
yeah, and a completely different team. It was all the veterans.
It was a veteran team. Yeah, I just was thinking about that and found it interesting that was, you know, that was a team that was in the thick of it and just totally petered out again because of lack of offense. Just totally went in the tank, and it was a bunch of experienced guys that it happened to.
I know, that made it even more puzzling, and it led to a misassessment by management of what was going on. When they sat down that year, Matt, they were in first place for over 150 days, and then basically the last 6 weeks barely won a game. And so when they sat down, the management sat down at the end of that season, the conclusion they came to was that the 150 days were the correct gauge of the team, and the last 6 weeks was an aberration. Well, it turned out to be they were just dead wrong. The team came out the next season and just continued playing in April as they had the previous August and September. and the manager got fired, and they decided to sell off. The decision was made to completely rebuild. Craig Council became manager. Doug Melvin left as general manager. David Stearns came in as general manager. And it started the process that has us where we are today with the second full season of the rebuild and a greatly inexperienced and turned over roster. And as we have talked about, they played ahead of schedule the first half and got people excited. Well, maybe this is the market correction back to where they actually should be in their rebuild. And maybe everybody got a little bit too giddy and got ahead of themselves. You usually don't get to skip steps in a rebuild. You know, Houston did the same process, and interestingly, David Stearns was part of it as the assistant GM there. And they broke through a couple of years ago and got into the wild card, but then they took a big step back last year, and now this year they're just going like gangbusters. So sometimes you do break through a little bit ahead of time, and then you step back because you weren't ready to sustain it. The Cubs did it a little differently. They broke through hugely in an unexpected way 2 years ago and almost got to the World Series, then followed it up by getting and to the World Series and winning it. And now they've stepped back a little bit. So baseball is just very unpredictable. There's no sport more unpredictable, and because they play so many games, there's so many variables. You know, we were saying last night that if a basketball team comes out and starts a game bad, the coach just puts five new guys in, takes those guys off the floor, and sees what the next five guys can do. Well, baseball, you can't do that because it's not free substitution. You take a guy out of the game, he's out of the game. You can't put him back in. And if you've got a position player group of 14 guys, you know, you've only got four or five extra guys. One of them is a second catcher that you're probably not going to use. So you don't have endless choices of mixing and matching. These are pretty much the guys you have, and that's what Craig Council has been doing. You know, Thursday night he put Arcia, who had been in the bottom half of his lineup all year, up in the number two spot. He's tried multiple leadoff hitters. You know, the leadoff spots have been a real killer for them because Jonathan Villar was so good last year in that spot, and this year he's been terrible. And then Eric Sogard took over and was great and unfortunately hurt his ankle and has not been good ever since. So they've had real trouble at the top of their order, and Eric Thames had batted second and he really cooled off. And so Braun and Shaw, the three and four hitters, have been coming up with nobody on base a lot. You know, Braun actually had a very good series against the Twins, multiple hits every game, but every time he came up, nobody was on base, so he couldn't get any RBIs. So, so Craig Council's been doing as much tweaking as you can possibly do with a baseball lineup. It's not free substitution. You can't put a whole new team in and pull the starters off and wake them up and then put them back in like you can in basketball. So there's only so much the manager can do, and there's been, you know, Craig Council's a guy who doesn't really want to have to do a lot of tinkering with his lineup. He'd love to put the same guys out there in basically the same order, but he's had to do it, and it just hasn't worked. And they just cannot sustain rallies. You know, in the game Thursday night, they had a chance to get back in the game, and Aguilar walked with the bases loaded and forced in a run, and the Twins changed pitchers. And then Pena hits a sharp grounder right down the third baseline. The third baseman makes a backhand stab, tags third, and throws over for a double play that kills the rally. And then they're done for the rest of the night. They don't do anything the rest of the night. They have hit into some tough outs at key points in games, but that's kind of what seems to happen when you're going bad. You get bad luck as well. You know, the Twins had like Zach Davies, the Brewers starting pitcher, had like death by a thousand cuts last night. They just kept grounding balls through the holes where nobody was playing. And so for whatever reason, when you're going good, you seem to have some good luck with where the balls go. And when you're going bad, you don't. It's a totally inexplicable part of baseball, but you can't blame everything that's going wrong on bad luck. I'm not suggesting that.
You know, and as much as the offense has been bad, Todd mentioned earlier that it might fall to the pitching staff to kind of carry the Brewers towards the end of the season. You know, is this staff capable of carrying the Brewers, you know, over the last couple months of the season and helping get them get to a spot where they're still in contention?
That's so far so good. I think Tom would agree with me. I'm frankly amazed at what the pitching staff has done overall. And with a lot of moving parts, guys on and off the DL, you know, you really only have a couple of guys who've been in the rotation steadily since the start of the season. And to be plugging in guys like Brent Suter and getting nice starts from him, and Brandon Woodruff has pitched well since he joined the rotation. It's really been kind of a remarkable story. Zach Davies has really turned things around and stabilized since a tough first 2.5 months. They really have carried the team, and the things that they've been able to do have been very impressive. And now the Brewers are expecting within the next probably, you know, 10 days to 2 weeks or so, adding Chase Anderson back into the mix. And you don't know if he's going to be able to hit the ground running. Obviously, he was pitching at a high level before he got hurt, but that's almost like a late season trade too. It can't hurt. So it's just been very interesting to me that on a very offensive focused team and a team that has a lot of offensive talent, it has been the pitching and a lot of guys who you didn't necessarily expect to deliver at the high level that they have been delivering. And it is going to be interesting to see if they can continue this down the stretch, because the team obviously needs at least one unit to continue to perform at a high level for them to stay in any kind of contention.
The flip side of that pitching equation, Matt, is the bullpen, which has constantly had to work with razor-thin margins, a lot of one-run leads, because the offense has struggled so much. They have not been able to add on runs. We talked earlier in this podcast about how they just they really struggle to score runs in the second half of games. You know, they're 1-42 in trailing after 7 innings. So most teams have bad records in those situations. You know, there's not as many comebacks in baseball as people might think, but one win is bad. And I believe it was that Mother's Day victory over the Mets when Manny Pena hit a 3-run homer in the 8th inning. That finally erased what had been like an 8-run deficit or something. So they just don't rally. They have not been a good late inning offense. So the bullpen is generally perceived as being bad because they have so many losses and blown saves and walks and bad whip and so on. And a lot of that is true, but they've also, as Craig Counsell pointed out the other day, always seem to be working with the thinnest of margins and have to be perfect to succeed because they're never given any cushions. You know, you get a save for a 3-run lead just but it counts as a save with a 3-run lead just as it does with a 1-run lead. But how many times, you know, have the Brewers relievers had 3-run leads? Not very often. It's almost always been one. So it's put a lot of pressure on the bullpen, and they've had a lot of low scoring games. I mean, Todd had those first two games in Tampa Bay, 2-0 and 3-0. It didn't get any more tense than that. The starting pitching did their jobs, and then the bullpens did hang on, the bullpen pitchers, but because the hitters just couldn't provide much of a cushion, it seems like every game they win is like that too. You know, when's the last time the Brewers won 8-1? You know, they just, every game when they do win is just razor thin margin and tense to the end. And that does kind of wear on teams.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking back at their games since the All-Star break, and out of the wins that they've had, only one has been, you know, kind of a runaway, and that was that 8-0 win at Washington in late July.
They just don't play many games like that. They just don't.
No, and you mentioned the Mother's Day game. That's ironically the one game I've been to this year, so maybe it's my fault. Maybe I haven't gone to enough Brewers games and they haven't had a chance to come back, and it's all about me.
Yeah, we love to have you out there. We need the help. Come on out.
Yeah, so that could be it. Who knows? But you know, kind of looking ahead at the schedule that's coming, obviously you guys mentioned that they have the Reds coming in, which could be, you know, beneficial for their offense considering Cincinnati's poor pitching. And then they have two off days next week, which is kind of rare considering that they haven't had, you know, that many off days, and you won't get that many off days going forward. You know, so what's kind of the prognosis for them going forward with that three-game set against the Reds, the two off days next week, a short set against the Pirates, and then a pretty long West Coast road trip?
I think they need to take advantage of this. You know, the last five games here at home, the two off days, because once they hit the road, it's going to be difficult. You know, those West Coast swings are tough regardless. But you're starting out with three in Colorado, a Rockies team that's playing really well and is solidly in the wild card picture. You know, they're one of the two wild cards at this point. And the Giants obviously have had a tough year, a lot of injuries and underperformance and everything. But the Brewers have never, ever played well in San Francisco. And then the LA Dodgers, who are just running away from everybody and playing ridiculous baseball. So it certainly would behoove the Brewers to take advantage of the remaining five games they've got at home here. And the Reds obviously are you know, a team that are eminently beatable. You know, the Pirates have been playing better of late, but traditionally they have not played well at Miller Park. So this is, if there's going to be a time where the offense breaks out, needs to break out and get on a little bit of a roll heading into that road trip, I would say this is the chance.
All right, well, that should about wrap up this edition of the Journal Sentinel Brewers Podcast. As always, you can find Tom and Todd's work at jsonline.com/brewers, which is where you can also download or stream every episode of the podcast. You can also subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and just about everywhere else you find podcasts. Thanks for listening.